You're listening to the MoneyWeb Now podcast series with Simon Brown. Live streamed every weekday at 6:30 a.m.
Thursday, 14 January. I'm Simon Brown, coming at you live and loud from the MoneyWeb global headquarters in Johannesburg, South Africa. On the show today, I'm chatting with Chantal Marks, property versus resources, both neither. Petri Radenhaes, different types of CFDs, over-the-counter versus direct market access. And then Johan Erasmus from Standard Bank, ETF redemptions. Every time there's ETF redemptions, I get a flood of questions. What is happening? Well, Johan will help us understand that. A poll yesterday, how important are dividends for you when selecting an investment? 40% said very, 39% said somewhat, and 21% said not really. So pretty much, yep, you folks like dividends. I'm with you. I'm a huge fan of dividends. MoneyWeb Now brought to you by Orbvest, a global real estate company that has a hyper-focus on acquiring stable, income-producing medical buildings in the USA. Investors use Orbvest's online platform to invest directly into low-risk commercial real estate, primarily in the healthcare niche in the USA, from as little as $5,000. Some morning headlines from MoneyWeb: how Spur is using delivery services to fight back. Remember, we chatted to someone about dark virtual kitchens last year, those sort of food outlets that don't have a physical presence, just a delivery presence. And Spur's trying their hand at that. And from Business Day, wine worth 1.5 billion rand at risk of being lost as industry runs out of storage capacity. The problem with wine, it's inelastic, and if you don't drink your wine tonight, you don't pick it up in a month or two's time. There are huge, huge stockpiles of wine in the Western Cape. Morning markets, overnight the US was green, S&P up 0.2, NASDAQ up 0.4. In Asia also green, Sydney up 0.5%, Turkey up 1.6%. Commodities mixed, gold 1,836, Rand 1,526. Top 40 opening call looking for a green open, almost 0.5% higher.
MoneyWeb Now, on the money. Also available on podcast.
Chatting now with Chantal Marks. She is Head of Research, F&B Wealth and Investments. Chantal, good morning. A happy new year to you. I put a tweet out last night. I was looking at some index charts. Property index is ended 2020 at 15-year lows. The Resi 10 index is at 12-year highs. It hasn't yet got past that 2008 highs, of course. Property resources are either, neither, both of those potentially on your buy list for 2021.
So both are on my buy list at the moment, but in very different ways. when it comes to resources, I think it's very important to start picking your stocks, simply because some of the valuations have run ahead of themselves. You also have a situation where you're in a place in the mining cycle where guys are probably going to start spending money pretty soon. The reason I'm saying this is because cash flow generation is exceptional. High. Regulatory risk is more or less the same as it was 5 to 10 years ago, and balance sheets are looking in pretty good nick. You also have an undersupply in many commodities at the moment, so they'll have to start investing somewhere in order to replace the supply that is basically lost forever once you've taken it out of the mine and you've sold it on. So for that reason, I think you need to start looking at companies that are conservatively managed and really manage their gearing well and aren't looking to make any crazy moves at the moment, because I think that's going to be probably what will shift resources towards the sell list at some point.
I've had this conversation with a colleague, Wayne McCurry, a number of times, where those balance sheets of those resource stocks are probably the strongest they've ever been, literally in 100 years of mining. But I take your point. The risk is now, what do they do? Do they give it to shareholders, or do they go buy some giant asset somewhere and frankly bring risk? So you're going to look at individuals. And do you prefer single commodity miners or the diverse? Or is, again, horses for courses?
Well, I mean, I've always been a big proponent of only investing in the big diversified miners. Mm-hmm. So I really like BHP Billiton. I really like Anglo American. But what's been happening in the PGM space is very, very interesting. So you have a situation where the market is in quite a significant deficit, mm-hmm. and demand continues to pick up. And even if you have a situation where speed-weight combustible engines, which is basically the big driver for PGM demand, is replaced by EVs or hydrogen vehicles, the loads in those in many of those vehicles are still very high for PGM. So you don't have a perfect kind of situation where PGM demand just falls off a cliff. We also have a situation where refining capacity at the moment is very constrained. So that should also support the price. Again, within PGMs, I'll go for quality over probably super excitement. And there, I think Implats looks particularly interesting, even though it's already run hard. And then Amplats, which has actually lagged, is also a very high-quality name worth watching.
And then on the property side, I mean, literally, I mean, this was the sector for a decade or so. It's really fallen out of favor. We saw some big moves yesterday in the property space. It's still tough for them, but there must be some value there, but perhaps again stock picking, or is this a sort of a sector wide?
So this one, I actually think you need to look at an ETF, and it's not necessarily because I think everything is going to move up, but I think you need to start spreading your risk a little bit. So on the one hand, you have the risk of the kind of the smaller, more levered companies not being able to pay dividends. And then you have the high quality, strong balance sheet, niche players who will be able to pay dividends. But the valuations are so different. So the levered companies are very, very cheap, offering very attractive dividend yields. And the high quality names have re-rated already. And you've got Growthpoint, for example, on a forward distribution yield of 6.5-7%, which is below the long bond yield.
Yeah.
So already that stock starts looking a little bit more expensive, but it's much safer. And for that reason, I think going into a property ETF is probably the best way and the least risky way to play the sector currently.
And that's usually how I play, because I find property stocks, I've always just taken the property ETF as a rule. Chantal Marx, Head Research, F&B, Wealth and Investments, really appreciate your time, your insights this morning.
You've worked hard to accumulate wealth, but with these uncertain times, how can you preserve and grow your wealth in a safer place?
Offshore.
While earning regular quarterly dividends in US dollars. The solution is here. Hundreds of investors from across South Africa are investing in specialized medical real estate in the USA, sourced by a highly skilled team who make it easy for you. Orbvest SA, an authorized FSP.
Visit orbvest.com.
MoneyWeb now. On the money.
Chatting now with Johan Erasmus. He's Head Index Passive Standard Bank One Invest. Johan, morning. Appreciate your early morning time. Every time a SENSE announcement comes out about redemption of ETFs, I get some panicked messages from people about why are they closing down my ETF. Yesterday you did one for your Rhodium debenture. What is redemption? What is the process? What is actually happening? And should current holders worry when they see those announcements?
Good morning, Simon, and may it be a good year for you. Simon, no, investors should not worry at all when they see a redemption notice. To try and explain it quite practically is, because the ETF and specifically the commodity ETFs, as well as other ETFs, has to hold the underlying stock, when an investor sells a large block of stock back to the fund cannot hold ETF units in the market that does not contain underlying assets, and in order to pay the investor that's selling their stock, the fund has to sell the underlying assets and then redeem the corresponding ETF units. So all that actually means is, as a fund redeems or creates, it increases or decreases the number of ETF units that is issued in the market and the underlying corresponding assets that is held for that. So, no, it does not mean it is closing down at all. It is just normal functioning. in order to protect the existing investors.
Yeah, I take your exactly, and that you know you so you took back a whole bunch of your rhodium ones, and that you know some people might say that's telling. It may or may not be that we can park that. The flip side, of course, is that there's the sense announcements that are the listing of additional units, and I'm exactly the same at that point. Someone's come to you and bought a large amount, or maybe a lot of people have bought a small amount to make it large, and you've then got to go and create these units and have them available, and hence the sense announcements. In essence, this is just the mechanics of the ETF workings in the background that you're notifying the market about.
Yeah, no, that's spot on. And another way to explain it as well is why, because the ETF, only the investors in that ETF currently pay the costs. There's mm-hmm. no additional cost drags. So investors don't pay for additional units or additional stock underlying those ETFs. So they're always secured, and there's always then the least cost that an investor can pay for these units. And generally, when investors see these creation and redemptions, they are in larger blocks. So you won't see creation and redemption for 10 or 100 ETFs.
Mm-hmm.
They're generally for 1,000 or 100,000 or 1,000,000. And then that excess stock is generally sits with the market makers that soak up some of the liquidity in the ETF, and it gives them some capability to market make on the exchange for the investors, so that there's the smooth trading of the ETFs as far as possible.
And quickly, a last question while I've got you on the line. I was chatting rhodium yesterday, and in fact, it was a rhodium ETF announcement or a debenture that came up just ahead of the market open. I was looking at that rhodium ETF. It is a 30-bagger in 5 years. I mean, Johan, you've spent some time in the market. This has been a spectacular investment for anyone who's held it. I mean, it is just rhodium has done amazing things in the last 5 years.
Yeah, no, Simon, it's you can say the stars aligned for the metal. Look, it remains a niche product. It's a niche metal.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
It's basically a bulk single industrial use through the PGMs into vehicles catalytic converters. But rhodium 10, 15 years ago was at $10,000 an ounce. It then came down to $500-$600 an ounce. Well, and today it's now back up. Yesterday it actually traded for the first time over $20,000 an ounce. And that's just a combination of how the world is changing, how the environmental and pollution laws are changing, and that the auto manufacturers have got no choice but to add more and rhodium into the vehicle systems for their catalytic converters. And then, of course, you've got the whole COVID potential mine shutdowns, closure of PGM mines, and all of that. So it's really a bit of the stars aligned, and it's caused this meteoric rise of the metal. Look, we were probably fortunate when we launched the ETF 5 years ago. Rhodium was trading at $600 an ounce, and yeah, investors in this ETF from the start. It's always hindsight makes perfect sense. You should have mortgaged the house. It remains a real niche product.
Yeah, if we could time travel. In this case, I mean, if you really want to prove you love him or her, you buy them a rhodium ring and not a gold ring. Johan Erasmus, Head Index Passive Standard Bank One Invest. Appreciate the time.
Business, finance, and investment news. MoneyWeb Now
with Simon Brown
on the Money. Also available on podcast.
Chatting now with Petri Radenhuis. He's founder of Herenia Capital Advisors. Petri, morning. Appreciate your time. We want to talk, and this is a lot of jargon and a lot of technical niche here, essentially CFD brokers who are either using over-the-counter or direct market access. But let's back up a moment. CFDs, contract for difference. if I'm on a CFD platform and I'm either buying or selling, going long or going short, that CFD broker is going to be hedging my position to remove the risk from them, so that any sort of profit or loss risk sits on my book and not on theirs. Is that a fair description of the hedging process?
I guess. Good morning, firstly. And to some extent, yes. So depending on how the broker does the hedging for that, when you're doing DMA or direct market access, usually what happens for every share you buy, as is in the case with Irenia, you might use of a prime broker or a big sort of large bank, corporate investment banking institution. And every time a client buys a sort of contract of difference on a share, the bank goes out and buys the underlying actual share and then writes the contract out for the contract for the difference in the share price or value to the client on the back of that. So the bank essentially carries no risk and is basically and essentially engaged in money lending activity.
Yeah,
right? So that's why you pay interest on funding the position, because you're using their money to buy and sell shares.
And if I make $100 on that trade, the bank has made $100 because they own the shares, so there's my profit.
They own the shares.
And if I lose $100, then they've lost $100, but I owe them the money. In other words, they're taking no risk. And what's important is I'm actively actually trading in the market. I'm seeing all the other buyers and sellers in the central order book on the JSE.
Yeah, you're actually interacting with the real market. So when trading like this, and just to specify, this is the direct market access
DMA.
Sort of method, right?
Mm-hmm.
Or DMA. When trading this way, you are essentially interacting with the real market. You're interacting with other buyers and sellers who are trading normal equities. And you could place an order, like a limit order in for a buy at a certain price. And if somebody decides to sell to you, then you get some stock.
Mm-hmm.
So yes, to answer that question.
The other option then is a number of brokers who will do what's OTC, over the counter. And my understanding of that is they're netting off, if I understand. So if I buy 100 shares and you in the same share go short, in other words, you sell 100, they just say, well, any profit that Pietri makes, he pays to Simon, or any profit that Simon makes, he pays to Pietri. And it's not in the order book so much, it's just us trading almost against each other.
Yeah, and that creates a number of challenges, right, or a number of different problems. So, for example, people, might be long a stock where the broker now doesn't necessarily put your orders straight into the market or put the orders into the market and buy the underlying equity, but rather, like you say, net off against other clients. Or essentially what happens is, the traders are now trading against the broker. So, for example, the broker stands ready to make a market. So I will buy from you and sell to you at a certain price, and I'll give you unlimited volume. So if there is, for example, in the real market or on a DMA basis, 100 shares on offer at 10 Rand and the next 1,000 shares is at 11 Rand, the OTC broker or the over-the-counter broker could fill your order at 10,000 shares at 10 Rand if he wants to buy.
Mm-hmm,
because they're writing a contract out directly to the client without having to go and buy the shares in the actual market. So this creates the ability for people to, potentially get into situations where they're over-leveraged, because sometimes they're buying, liquidity that's not there. Also, it's detrimental to the exchange, because in a situation, for example, where I would buy 100 Anglo shares and you would sell 80 or go short 80 shares, in total 180 shares have traded. But now an OTC broker only would have to say, well, okay, this one's short 80, that one's long 100, so that means I need to be net 20 shares long to hedge myself. And they'll go out and buy 20 shares instead of 180 shares that trade. So this, is obviously brings a little bit of fair price discovery stuff into question, but I think that's maybe beyond the scope of today. Ultimately, what happens is then, let's say I stop out and you make some money, or let's say we both stop out, we're losing our money directly to the OTC broker rather than to a different trader on the other side of the stock exchange,
Yeah.
So it depends a little bit on, my personal preference is to trade DMA. Most of the clients that most of the accounts that we do at Irenia are DMA accounts, and that's just our preferred way of doing it. OTC is very popular, though, particularly in the forex space. That's a lot of the time why you can get 100 times leverage with when you're trading forex. You know, you put 1% margin down to buy $40,000 worth of sort of currency in a trade.
They net it off.
Net it off, and they sort of, you know, they know you've got a 90% chance of losing your money. So why put the flow through the actual exchange when, hey, man, you've got a 90% chance of losing, so I might as well take it from you in the process.
We'll leave that there.
And that, I think, is a bit of an ethical issue with OTC stuff, but not everybody does it, to be truthful.
In my sense, very much, OTC almost sits, it means you're sort of sitting between the actual real market and the platform you're trading on. We'll leave it there. That's Petri Raden-Hayes, founder of Herenia Capital Advisors. The poll today is, do you trade CFDs, contracts for difference? Yes, no ways, keen, but need to learn more. You'll find that on the MoneyWeb Twitter account at MoneyWeb. The show is brought to you by Orvest's latest investment opportunity, Medical 29. It's a multi-tenanted Class A medical office building located in Phoenix, Arizona. For more information, visit orvest.com. Orvest SA is an authorized financial services provider, license number 50483. Quick poll repeat, do you trade CFDs? Yes, no, keen, but need to learn. You'll find that on our Twitter account at MoneyWeb. That's it for today. We're live every weekday morning on the MoneyWeb website and the app, 6:30 a.m. Podcast available from 7, the website, the app, or wherever good podcasts are aggregated. Huge thanks to my team, Eddie and Kodora, to you for listening, my guests for their early morning. My name is Simon Brown. This is MoneyWeb Now. We'll chat again tomorrow.
You've been listening to another MoneyWeb Now podcast, posted every weekday at 7 a.m. on moneyweb.co.za. MoneyWeb Now, on the money.